Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast. In this episode, I get to talk with my friend and teacher, Gary Temple Bodley. And actually, the reason that I have this podcast is because of his inspiration, which inspired me to call it Inspired Artist. I told him that I wanted to start a podcast, having conversations with the students that I was coaching through his boot camp, which I'll talk about. And he said, you know, why don't you do something related to music, since that's what your scene is? And I thought to myself, well, that's absurd. Why would I do that? And then as I told people about it, it became very clear that that was a really great idea. So here we have this podcast. Gary is full of wonderfully inspired ideas. He is really good at listening to those ideas and acting on them. He channels a group of beings called Joshua, and they encourage humans to listen and take action on their inspiration. You receive a thought, an inspired thought, when you're in a state of alignment, when you're feeling good. And most of the time, we don't even notice these thoughts because we're so used to how we see ourselves that we don't even think that we're worthy of following them. Some of them are really easy. So you might get an inspired thought that says, go to the library and pick up a book. And that might seem pretty doable. So you would do that. You wouldn't even really notice that that was an inspiration, but it is. And maybe because you went and got that library book, you got a new idea, which led to something else and this and that and the other thing. Well, there's inspired ideas that are coming to us so many times during the day. And because of our self-concept, because of the way that we see ourselves, we're not acting on them. And so we're leading much smaller lives than we would otherwise. Artists are really great at transforming or transmuting these inspirations into their art. And so we have a little bit of a leg up on this whole game, I think, because we are used to doing this. We're used to sort of drawing information from the ethers and transmuting it into whatever our art form is. For me, it's music. And, you know, we find that people who go through the boot camp, whether they're artists or not, they can learn to start listening to these inspired ideas. It leads them to new relationships. It leads them to seeing things differently, more clearly, so that they can enjoy their life, so that they can go after the opportunities that are presented to them, so that they can talk themselves out of the limitations that they have imposed upon themselves. The human experience is about limitation, and when you can transform that limitation, you can create more empowering ways of seeing situations and things and people, and ultimately you feel better. And when you feel better, you can receive more inspiration. And when you know how to do this whole thing that we teach you in the boot camp, then you can start acting on that inspiration more often. I can't even fathom the changes that have occurred for me in the 6 months or so that I've been doing this work with Joshua and Gary. And I just feel compelled to share it, to spread this light, to let people know that they don't have to struggle. They don't have to improve even. You don't have to get better. You just need to see yourself more clearly. You need to see yourself in a more empowering way, and you'll be able to make choices. You'll be able to act on inspirations that will astound you, and the opportunities that will come your way will astound you because you will have exercised the muscles of actually seeing them. You are surrounded by opportunities right now, but because you're focused on different things, your muscles for recognizing those opportunities are not as developed. I use muscles in air quotes. It's not an actual muscle, but we want to feel good. We want to lead a great life. We want it to feel good to us. We don't want it to just look good to other people, right? And when we start to, you know, have our life be about trying to please other people or trying to be things for other people or trying to obtain things because we think it's going to make us happy, we start chasing these, you know, these ideas of, well, if I only had this, then I would be happy. We find that when we get these things, nothing has changed. We still feel the same way that we did about ourselves. We just have new circumstances. And so So that's really what this work is all about. It's seeing yourself differently. It's understanding the blessed, the magnificent, the beautiful being that you are right now so that you can enjoy every step along the way in this journey of life. So if you're interested in finding out more about the bootcamp, just email me, info@sierrenkar.com, and we'll just have a chat about it. The next one begins January 6th in the new year. So anyway, without further ado, and thanks for listening, this is me and Gary Temple Bodley discussing Joshua and my journey and his journey. And here we go.
I was just talking to someone the other day who's going to be joining the boot camp, and she, in this conversation, had been listening to Joshua, and she was into Kundalini yoga. I said, "Hey, do you know Sri Gun?" And she goes, "Yeah, I do." You know, so you're getting really famous too, and now with your podcast, you're
cool. So this is someone who didn't know I was involved with you.
No idea.
Oh, yep. How cool!
Just listen to music, and I think she met you at some event somewhere. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I look forward to finding out who that is.
Yeah. Cool. So you started your podcast, which is called Inspired Artists. It's climbing the charts. In fact, I saw it today that it is like up there in U.S. musical interview.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to get that chart app that you told me about.
So it's cool. So how's it been going? How many have you done so far?
Oh, gosh. You asked me that. 17, I think, maybe.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
That's right. I
also noticed that you're charting really high in like Greece and other
podcast?
Yeah, because you must have talking to people who have followings in Greece and followings in Norway and followings in
Netherlands. Oh, no, yeah, you know what? I just interviewed Alexia Chelem, who I think is from Cyprus or something. So yeah, she has some Greek Maybe that's why. Otherwise, I have no idea who that would be.
So how are you finding these people?
So mostly it's been my friends, just people that I know. You had the idea really for this podcast, but it made so much sense because I'd just gotten back from this festival and I was thinking to myself, man, I just love these conversations that I have with other musicians. It would be so cool to do this more often. And so I'm having these great conversations with my friends, basically.
Yeah. Well, that's what a podcast is. A recorded conversation with your friends.
Exactly.
About stuff you're interested in.
Right.
Okay. But, you know, Inspired Artist implies that there's more to it just than making music. You know,
it's sure. Like, yeah. You know,
there's a spiritual component to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, they're so obviously, not, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say, well, so that, you know, that's the word that Joshua uses all the time. It's this inspired action. It's taking action in love and, you know, listening to our guides and to our inner voice and pushing past that fear to do it, which was what I had to do to start the podcast.
And everything else you've ever done that was inspired. You had to push past fear in order to do it. Yeah, because it's always going to come up. Sure. And musicians are... You know, it's an interesting thing because obviously they're receiving inspiration to write the music and to get so into playing their instrument or singing or whatever it is. And so they're acting on inspiration. And there's so many musicians, but I'll bet you there's 1,000 people who want to do that for everyone who's actually doing it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I was actually thinking about that. Because I'm not generally with musicians, like the men that I've been with in my life are not, you know, doing that. And so I was kind of thinking about that because I'm in a new relationship now and, you know, making all these decisions that would seem crazy from the outside, right? They're all like these inspired actions and people are going like, "No, you're doing what now?" But to me, this seems totally natural because I'm used to in my musical realm making all these, you know, decisions that are like, well, of course I would do that.
Yeah.
That just feels totally right. Of course it, you know, which is feeling more and more comfortable because of the Joshua work, I think, for sure. But I think that it does prep you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we'll think about how long have you been musical? Your whole life?
Yeah, always.
Yeah. And you've always been singing?
Yeah.
And when was the first time you sang in front of people?
I was like 4.
Yeah. And when was the first time you sang in front of people who didn't know you?
That age. I think it was probably like a talent show or something, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And maybe you had less fear at 4 because you didn't know what you know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who cares? Okay. So then you start. So how did this all progress? How do you go from 4 to where you are now?
Well, I think I spent quite a few years, you know, at high school, college, sort of comparing myself to other people and going like, well, am I really worthy of being a musician? And, you know, shouldn't I be saving whales and trees and stuff? And, you know, or like making a lot of money or, you know, whatever. There are other people who do this maybe better than me, or, you know, so I had to get over those worthiness issues. And I wouldn't have called it that at the time, but, you know, doing the Joshua work, that's what I'm realizing it was. And, that took a while to get over, honestly. It took a while because I didn't have the tools that I have now. Yeah. So it was like this, you know, cyclical process of going through the woe is me and I must not be good at this and look how other people are progressing and I'm not, for, you know, years and years and years.
Yeah.
Doing the mantra music, I think, softened it because it didn't seem as performancey.
Right.
And therefore, yeah.
Yeah. So you have an idea of what a successful musician is, and this could apply to anything anyone's ever doing. And then you compare yourself to the way other people are doing it. And from your perspective, it seems like they're doing something better, or that they are better, or they naturally have better talent or everything. But this, like everything else, is a journey of self-discovery. And so when you discover who you are, then you can't compare yourself to anyone else because no one can be who you are.
Right.
And if you look at the people who are doing, you know, really amazing things, they're so just into them. You know, they understand their uniqueness and aren't always comparing.
Yeah. That's so key for artists to understand. And it seems like it would be so obvious because, of course, Bob Dylan can't be compared to, I don't know, Pavarotti.
Right.
Or, you know, or even any other folk musician. I mean, they're unique, you know?
Yeah. And that's what we love about them.
Yeah.
And that's what, plus you don't have to be all things to all people. In fact, you don't want to be all things to all people.
Exactly.
You want to be, attract your tribe or your fans, you know, and you're not trying to say, cause this is, I've always been so into music, but I was into alternative and punk and new wave music. And those people were not changing who they were to be something they're not, except for the occasional hit song, you know? Uh-huh. And so, like the Ramones, if you saw them in concert, it's incoherent. They're such a punk band, you can't understand what they're saying. And then they produce Rock and Roll High School, which is a song everyone knows, but it's not really a Ramones song at all. It's just a prefabricated song just to get on the radio. And then, you know, there's just this pressure to become popular in order to what? Make money? You know, really, where's it going? That's what selling your soul is you're being something you're not, inauthentic, just to get attention.
Yeah. And it feels so awful. I imagine that would feel really awful.
Yeah.
It's like that thing that Josh is always talking about where, you know, you could, if you have that lack mentality and you win the lottery, then it's just going to show you more and more about your beliefs around lack. And I think the people who end up being super successful for, you know, masquerading as someone that they're not, it just becomes worse and worse and worse and worse feeling, even though from the outside, we're like, oh my gosh, they're doing so well. You know, they're committing suicide at the age of 30 or whatever.
I was just going to say that they are somehow killing themselves, whether it's drugs or suicide or whatever, because they assumed that this, you know, huge rise in popularity would finally make them feel worthy. And it makes them feel the opposite. Queen Latifah was talking about, she had won a Grammy or maybe it was an Oscar or something. And after all the parties, she realized she's coming home to the same apartment that's empty. There's no family and no boyfriend, girlfriend there. And she's like, what is this? You know, here I reached the pinnacle of all of this. Right. And it's like, it's not satisfying. Yeah. Because she's not, you know, if you're doing it to be someone you're not, then you can't get any satisfaction out of it. And I would imagine, and I know for a fact, that true satisfaction comes from just expressing yourself naturally, mm-hmm. and not needing to receive accolades from right. it, you know. And then you obviously do receive accolades because you're being authentic and right. appreciation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just been amazing. There's 100 people who've gone through the boot camp, and a whole lot of those people came from people that you know, but also came from people that didn't realize you were part of the boot camp. And they just knew you because they're into yoga or whatever. And they love you. It's like this amazing thing. Oh, I love her. Tracy and I were just in yoga. I think I told you the story. And we're hearing your voice as this other instructor in Newton, North Carolina, with this thick North Carolina accent, you know, is playing a playlist, and you're on that playlist. And yeah. afterwards we go, we know her. She was, yeah. really, she was here in Newton just a little while ago. Really?
And you know what's so fascinating about that for me, because that's happening a lot to me now, is I'm getting this praise that I thought I needed
right.
years and years ago. And while it does feel good, because it's like, oh, this is nice. Like, yeah. how wonderful that, you know, it doesn't like change me. Mm-mm. You know, it doesn't feel like, oh, phew, now I can be happy.
It's know? More like it's natural, you know, okay, yeah. that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing with Joshua. It's yeah. like I was craving this appreciation from my friends and wife and father and all this stuff, parents. And we're doing things in order to try and get it. And then I just stopped doing that and said, I'm just going to appreciate myself, everyone else, the conditions. And I'm going to cultivate that feeling from within. And so now I get more appreciation than I've ever had before. But it doesn't make me feel worthy because I came at it feeling worthy. And it just yeah. feels natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome.
An amazing shift. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, so now you go on. So like in your 20s and stuff, and high school and college, were you a different kind of performer? Were you in a band or singing normal
yeah,
songs?
Yeah, I wrote. So the way it evolved for me is I was, I think, I don't know if I was clinically depressed, but a pretty morbid teenager. Like I wanted my room to be dark and cave-like, you know? And I would go in there and I would spend all my after school time writing really depressing poetry. And then my mom put our piano, it was like an upright piano, in my room. And so now I had this piano, and my dad wanted me to learn piano from an early age, which never really interested me until my college piano teacher showed me how to use it the way I wanted to, which was to be able to write my own music. Cause I wasn't interested in playing classical or jazz standards or whatever.
Yeah.
But so I turned this poetry, this like really depressing, well, I don't know, from my perspective now, I think it's really depressing poetry, into songs. And that's how I started to do that. And so at a certain point after college, I decided, okay, well, the only thing that really makes me happy is doing music. So I'm going to see how this goes. So I had like a portable weighted keyboard that I'd take all around the state of Connecticut, because that's where my parents lived at the time. And I would perform this depressing poetry set to music. And when I started doing yoga, I realized, I was like, I can't keep rehashing my, you know, sadness in front of people. And I don't think I would have verbalized it exactly that way at the time, but I couldn't sing anymore. And my parents were like, why aren't you singing anymore? I'm like, I don't know. I just can't keep doing this. So within that space, I met some people who did mantra music, and it felt really good. And someone asked me, this woman, Cece White, who's so cool. She sings background vocals for like a lot of famous people in the scene. And she decided to start doing mantra music, you know. And she asked me to sing backup vocals for her. And that's how I started and I guess felt worthy of, you know, singing mantra music.
Yeah. And so do you now write mantra music or is that, how does that work?
Well, I write the music. Obviously I don't write the mantras. I've been writing more English language stuff lately too. And, the way I actually write now is interesting because one of my dreams was to be solely a recording artist. I do live stuff. Like I'm pushing past the fear of performing live a lot more, but I love recording. I love how I can be in my pajamas and record. So I collaborate with this guy from Sweden and
Joshua.
He's in Portland.
Oh, okay.
Joshua's, but I did collaborate with him too. And that was a very similar, easy process. But the guy in Sweden, Mons, he goes by Songs of Eden. He sometimes will just send me an instrumental and I'll just sing something over top of it. And that'll be a song and it'll take us a day, you know, or I'll send him the chords for something, sing something over it. And then he'll create the whole landscape for it, send it back to me. I'll re-record it. And then that's the thing. So it's just become simpler and simpler.
Wow. Did you see on the Sunday morning show, there was an interview with Billie Eilish?
No.
Okay, so she's gigantic now, right?
My three-year-old's really into her.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything she's ever recorded, ever, is from her bedroom.
Oh, wow.
And this is her family's house, and she started when she was 13, and I think she's 17 now. And her brother is this musician too. He's older. And so the brother records her and then does all the music. And it's all done in this tiny little bedroom where it's actually a two-bedroom house. And the brother's moved out. And the parents sleep in the bedroom. And one room is now where she sleeps. And the other room is her bedroom where she records it. And everything that you hear, like all those songs that are huge, come from that bedroom, not a recording studio.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I can believe that. I think recordings that are made at home are better. I'm biased. I don't like recording in studios. It's like, it feels too pressurized. You're like, it's like you have to perform in this certain window. You know, when you do it at home, I could decide that I can't sleep one night and I could, you know, go into the studio and do something at 11 p.m. while everyone's asleep or midnight or whatever and record something. It's you know, like when you're inspired, you can do it.
Well, right, because you're doing it at the right time because you're inspired. Yeah. And also there's got to be something with the vibrations of the place. So now you're not mixing your vibrations with other people. Now, I don't know how true this is, you know, because I sort of, Joshua said many times, is you bring your vibration with you.
Sure.
But you could be affected by the vibration of others there. You know, imagine a sound engineer who's just, you know, not that into it and just doing it, paying for an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you got that vibration mixed in there as well.
Sure.
Yeah. So at home, you've got your space that's full of love and the family's there and everything too.
Yeah.
And so now you record something and then you just put it out there. How do you put it out?
I just submit it through CD Baby. I actually have to do one now. We just recorded a cover of Happy by Pharrell Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Very different version. I really like it. And so I have to put that out. Yeah.
Awesome. And so you put it out, it's all free or people can buy CDs?
Either it goes through streaming platforms, which are free, or, you know, they can buy downloads. The stuff that I do with Songs of Eden, we haven't made into CDs. I sort of feel like CDs are, you know, phasing out. So I have some CDs, but I'm not sure if I'll print anymore.
But, I know my next car won't have a CD player in it. And the electric cars and stuff don't have CD players because it takes up too much weight.
Right. But and that's what people say. They're like, I'd love a CD. I don't have anything to play it.
Yeah. It's funny how this is moving so quickly, you know?
Yeah.
But then, okay. So let's say that you're an artist and you're doing what you're inspired to do. But you might attach needing to survive from this music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so then you do things you're not inspired to do, like tour or right. promote or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting thing that you've got to be aware that your abundance is not tied to this thing you're passionate about, because you'll get whatever you need to live mm-hmm. from a million other sources, and it has to be what's inspired, what feels good. And this is tricky, because you could say, I don't like to tour, or I don't like to perform live, right? Mm-hmm. And that could just be what you're inspired to do, but fear pops up. And so you say, I don't like it. What you're saying is, I don't like this feeling of fear.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you know it's like not inspired, or, you know, it's just fear and you're just not willing to get over that fear?
I think I'm getting better at this. This is one of the most subtle things that Joshua teaches that is tricky.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's like, is this fear because my perspective needs a shift? Is it, well, I mean, I guess it's always that your perspective needs a shift, but like, am I really just not into it? Or yeah. am I really into it, but I'm talking myself out of it?
Right. So, how we figure this out is we say, is this activity aligned with love and with who I authentically am? So you might say, I'm an introvert or I'm an extrovert. Well, an extrovert is who you naturally are. Everyone is an extrovert, right? Yes. But if you call yourself an introvert, you're saying, what you're saying is, I have this fear of being with people.
Yeah.
So you say, I'm not really into going to parties, you know. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Well, what you're saying is, I'm not able to overcome the fear of, and I can't be who I truly am at these parties because the fear stops me from doing that.
Yeah.
So we got to say, okay, well, if you were this pure, positive, limitless, magnificent being of love, wouldn't it be natural to be singing in front of people? Life.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't even the singing in front of people that freaked me out. It was the people talking to me afterwards.
Right.
It was like too much. Yes. I would get headaches when I got home and not be able to sleep. And so that has been really, that has really shifted, you know, in my life since starting the boot camp and doing all this. I mean, well, I'm talking to total strangers online now.
Yeah. Well, now, there's a couple things about that, too, because, like, Esther does no talking at all.
Right.
She just leaves, right? That's mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. And I would be out there talking.
Right.
But also, it has to do with what you're talking about, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, if you can engage with people on this spiritual level, connecting to, you know, you're in alignment, you're receiving thought, and you're realizing that this connection to this person is a spiritual connection, whether it only lasts for a couple of minutes. And so you'll receive everything you need to say if you can get in that state of alignment, right?
Right.
And then
right.
it becomes fun, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And not feeling like you have to engage with anyone because you, whatever, need to please them or,
right.
you know, make sure that they, whatever, that they feel good about the concert because you paid attention to them or, you know, so it really, it has to be authentic and then it feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can just leave, cut that part out of it if you
totally.
Want to.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Good. All right. Yeah. So imagine you're performing in front of 20 people, how that feels, or 100 people or 1,000 people. Is there any difference, any wobble in any of that?
No, I think I could handle 1,000. I would probably rehearse more.
Well, that rehearsing is sort of getting rid of the wobble, right?
Yeah.
You're a little more confident that you know everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny. So I think about that too. And so I also think, all right, why would I want 1,000 people rather than 20 people?
Mm-hmm.
It's some ego in there. You know, you got to think, well, if I prefer 1,000 to 20, is it an ego thing or is it a more fun thing? You know,
it's pretty fun to have that many people chanting together.
It's got to be great energy.
Yeah. Actually, when I was in Spain, the people, there were maybe like 50 people in a room because we did some sort of impromptu yoga studio concerts where it was just me, and they chanted so loudly it was like having 1,000 people in there. I couldn't even hear myself at one of them.
Every time I see, you know, with the in a story about Billie Eilish, and I, there's also a great documentary about the Avett brothers. Another one about the, who are those three brothers that were really big? But the
Hanson?
No, those no, it's recent ones, you know. It's on Netflix now, I forgot. But anyway, when the crowd, so in this one with the three brothers, they're talking about, you know, they really were just playing and playing all these different venues and no one really knew them. And then a couple songs got on the radio and then the crowd was singing every word to every song.
Right.
That must be amazing, you know,
just yeah.
to have that.
That was so sweet. I mean, I'd never had that happen to me where in Spain, they like rehearsed my concert or something. I mean, they knew every song. That feels so good.
That must be the greatest thing in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, here's something you're passionate about. When you were a kid, you thought you were good at it, mm-hmm. right? And then you come along and you start to have doubts, mm-hmm. right? And then you compare yourself to others and you have more doubts. So you're mm-hmm. seeing yourself from a limited perspective. Then what gets you to see yourself from this higher perspective that you're perfect as you are and you don't need to be different than you are? How did you ever get to that level?
I think it was a slow route, at least from my perspective. Uh-huh. So the first mantra that I wrote music to was, I am the light of my soul. I am beautiful. I am bountiful. I am bliss. I am. And the reason I did that, and it's my one hit, the reason I did that was because it felt so like such a lie to sing it, you know? Yeah. So I recognized, I was like, I really need this mantra. So I wrote a song to that. And, but like, I realized I was in a breathwork thing a few weeks ago. I was not ready for the Joshua message at that point, because if someone had told me I was perfect the way I was, I would have just been like, BS, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not joining. Like, what are you talking about?
I have a lot of, like, I've been doing a lot of Instagram posts and commenting on other people's posts and everything. And specifically saying that is that you have to realize that you're perfect as you are. And I've been really getting into saying it, that you are perfect, that you're not flawed. The illusion of imperfection is this thing that's keeping you limited. You weren't perfect. You were perfect when you were a baby. You were perfect when you were two. You were perfect when you were four. You didn't get imperfect along the way. You were just told you were imperfect. That's all it was, mm-hmm. right? So this is mm-hmm. the illusion of imperfection. And I don't, and I'm like, in the beginning, I was like, no one's going to want to hear this. And so mm-hmm. I didn't say it. And I'm like, no, they may not be ready to hear it, but people weren't ready for the cell phone when that first came out. You know, you have to come to a vibrational thing. And this mantra is infecting your consciousness with right. truth of who you are.
Right.
You know? And so the more we can do that, like I right now, I sign every email, love Gary, mm-hmm. unless it's to the plumber. But everyone, you know, generally.
You write emails to your plumber, Gary?
Yeah. If I need to get something fixed, I send him an email, you know? Right. So, but otherwise it's love, because I want to cultivate this feeling of love, even though it's awkward and there's a little doubt about what's this person going to think when I just say love Gary, because uh-huh. everyone signs it, you know,
sincerely,
since or namaste, you know, right. No one's saying love. I mean, they do back to me. I get love back all uh-huh. the time. But it's like, why not just say love? Because that's what I want to impart. I want to put more of that into my life and get more back. And so in the beginning of these things, it's really uncomfortable because you're not really a vibrational match. And then you get more and more comfortable with mm-hmm. all these ideas that are beneficial. So right. if the idea is beneficial, right. you can be fearless in putting it out there, whether people are ready or not.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think the fact that it was, you know, that mantra was established and it came from someone else, so I didn't feel so, it didn't feel so personal to me, mm-hmm. you know, like I didn't come up with it myself. I didn't have, there wasn't wobble around sharing it,
yeah.
but it's interesting that that's the most listened to thing that I've ever done. And it was the first thing that I ever did. And, you know, that people really want to hear that. I am beautiful.
People want to hear it.
I am. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. This whole thing about self-talk, you know, you have control over that self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think you do mm-hmm. until you start changing it. And then you realize you had that control all along. And so why not throw in some empowering ideas there? So who wrote that mantra?
That was Yogi Bhajan, the guy who brought Kundalini Yoga to the West. Yeah.
And who writes all the other mantras?
They're different... They come from different places and different saints and, you know, spiritual beings. And some of them were channeled by Yogi Bhajan, you know, and some of them we don't know. And, you know.
And have you ever written your mantras?
So let's see. Well, so the song Steady as Stone I did, Just As I Am Enough. I don't know that I necessarily wrote that, but I could call that I wrote that.
Yeah. And... don't you have access to all the mantras that will ever exist?
Yeah, right? For sure. Yeah. And current is so much more exciting, right? Because it's a match to what's going on now. So, yeah.
Yeah, especially, you know, a lot of stuff is written like that spirituality-wise is really general mm-hmm. and also written in a different time. So it's a different sense of what those words meant back then.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's the stuff that you can bring forth now, like the Joshua meditations. They just all came through as they were exactly, they're all 15 minutes long. They're all exactly, you know, that many, the same intro, the same middle part, same end. And then whatever the meditation's about is different in the middle. But it's this download from non-physical who wants these things to come. And all mm-hmm. you have to be is this cooperative component. So any song you ever wrote, you were the vibration, the cooperative vibration of that song when it came through.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why I think that most bands' first albums are their greatest album, often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very few of them go on to make a whole string of great albums. And generally it's mm-hmm. the beginning part. Because... yeah. They have such a desire and they're such in that vibration of whatever they want to communicate. It flows through them. And some of the greatest songs have been written 5 minutes. And then when they try and repeat this, they're efforting their way into a repeat of some magic that happened that they can't capture again because they can't get into that vibrational state of this intense, pure desire to express whatever they're trying to express.
Yeah. Which is why this is the most exciting time, in my opinion, to be a musician. Because if you want to be hugely successful, by whatever your estimation is, you don't necessarily have to have an engine breathing down your neck and demanding that you produce, you know, this kind of album. And I mean, you can just release it on your own. It's so exciting.
Yeah. You can make it any way you want. You don't have to listen to anyone else's advice.
Outsource it. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's never been easier. It's never been cheaper. It's never been easier to publish.
Yeah.
There's never been more variety. And it's never been easier to connect with those who resonate with what you're doing, too. And through podcasts, you can talk about these ideas. And do you ever play music on your podcast?
Sometimes I'll play an excerpt of the song of a song from an artist that I'm interviewing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And then videos as well. Like your videos that are on YouTube are mm-hmm. really cool too.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I couldn't tell the difference between you making a video and you know, maybe a record company producing a big budget video.
The music videos. Yeah. I had this guy in Phoenix who was helping me out making some videos. They were cool. Yeah.
It's awesome. It's all you need, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. And so many times with music videos, it's the director's vision of the song. Mm-hmm. Well, who cares about his vision? I want to know the band's vision of the song.
Right, right.
And generally what I want to do is see the band playing the song, you know, that's mm-hmm. the most important thing. So mm-hmm. you can do the video, you can do the music, you can do the production, you can do the distribution, you can do the communication with the fans in your own way. Mm-hmm. And you have and anything you're inspired to do, you can inspire with, and it can be purely you in an authentic way.
Yeah.
So when you interview these inspired artists, are you seeing that they're more authentic than the average person?
I don't know. I haven't been scaling them.
Or are they living in fear too?
I think all artists have some, you know, we have some areas where we're really expanded and we're taking lots of risks and we're inspired, and then other areas where, and I'm not sure, we don't really discuss that in the podcast or haven't, you know, maybe that'll come up. But yeah. I think for artists, it does tend to be financial. There's tends to be a lot of limiting beliefs around how much money you can make as a musician.
And an artist, a painter too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have so many artists that are in the Joshua community and they are attaching their value mm-hmm. to the art. Mm-hmm. Say, if people like this, it means I'm worthy.
Right.
And so it's hard for them to sell it because right there is a display of your worthiness. If you felt worthy, it'd sell for a lot. If you don't feel worthy, it has to be a reflection of how you feel about yourself.
Yeah. Taking that pressure off myself to make, well, you know, I never expected to make money doing music.
Yeah.
Honestly. Well, that's not true. As a singer-songwriter, that was what I did expect, and that was going to be the measure of how successful I was. But as a mantra artist, when I did that first album, I didn't expect anyone to listen to it even, you know, not even, and it, you know, it continually, it is income generating, which is fascinating to me. Yeah. So, you know, you remove it and it flows, which obviously makes sense according to universal law, but you know.
Well, it's sort of like Joshua's the same sort of way. It's you write a book, you know, some people buy it and you make a little money here and there. Books don't mm-hmm. make a lot of money. So if they do $5 million sales, then sure. But in the early stages, it's not like that. But what you're doing is you're giving because it's $15, it's giving of yourself, or a CD is giving. And then mm-hmm. you might have a website, you might have the podcast, free stuff that's people can get into. And then in the case of an artist, it might be a performance where mm-hmm. they make some money, or it might be, you know, something they sell, t-shirts or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. Or maybe they write something and it becomes a jingle for a product or something. There's all kinds of ways, but if you attach your worth to anything, which is what's great about channeling, is it's not me, you know, so I can like, that's a separate thing altogether.
Right,
But it's just like amazing how everything's just happening. It's like, oh, it's all coming from all different places and everything's put together. And if you had tried to plan this, it'd be impossible. Mm-hmm. You just have to go with that flow of inspiration, trust that you're worthy of all of it, and then let it take you, knowing that you'll have to push past fear to do certain things and just be okay. But if you think certain things are bad and wrong, you know, then you're going to limit yourself.
Yeah. Which is, it's like the pandemic of the spiritual community in what I've been observing from the coaching. It was like this aha moment. It's like, oh my gosh, the spiritual community that I've been involved in is so blocked by this idea of this is spiritual and right, and this is not spiritual and therefore wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and which is so conflicting internally, because then there are things that you do in your life that are spiritual and therefore right, but also things that you need to do in your quote unquote real life that are not spiritual and therefore wrong. And so you have this whole internal like battle going on with yourself of like, well, in these aspects of my life, I'm not being the person that I should be. And in these parts of my life, I am being the person that I should be. And I have this whole ego-based, you know, thing going on whereby I judge myself based on how spiritual I am being. And the spirituality is dependent on all these factors, you know, all these belief systems that I've accumulated. It was totally fascinating. And I never realized that. And of course, because that's what I was doing and, you know, do to a certain extent. And I'm, you know, catching myself doing.
Well, in a larger sense, this is this idea of being good or bad, right?
Yeah.
So spiritual.
But I think we place so much more pressure on our, I think once you consider yourself a spiritual person, you put this that much more pressure on yourself, I think.
Well.
To me. Or it's different maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the same theme. So look at religion. As long as you're doing what the religion says you should do, whatever that religion says you should do, you're a good X, Christian, right. Muslim, whatever. Right. And then if you can't do what they want you to do, then you're bad. And so you have to judge yourself or you have to judge everyone else. And you, and the judgment is this form of control based in fear. But really, it's this programming of being this idea of good. The idea of good is someone who does not cause fear in others. Mm. So they have to restrict how they're being so they don't cause fear in their parents or teachers or friends or whatever, so that they'll receive love. Well, here you are, a spiritual artist in this genre, but you could have been a punk rocker. And if you're a punk rocker, you can't make an album that sells any copies, otherwise you're a sellout, right? And they'll condemn you. So you have to be, and you probably can't wear normal clothes and you can't, you know.
Can't be happy.
Can't be happy, right? Can't make any money. So this, so when you get trapped in this box, especially if you're in a genre of music, you have to live that genre. I mean, you can't be Axl Rose and, I don't know, do something that Axl Rose wouldn't do. It would, you know, I don't know what that is, but, you know, it's a sort of
have
the
a
same
floral
thing.
Bedspread.
You have to get your, so here you are in the spirituality genre, and you probably can't enjoy cocaine.
Right. But I really want to.
I know. Once in a while. No. If you want to do cocaine, you should do cocaine. You know?
Yeah.
No one should have judgment on what you want to do as long as.
I have not been yet inspired to do cocaine. I will keep you posted.
It's gross. Yeah. Or, you know. Anyway, so like for me, I'm not representing anything of a spiritual nature. I'm going to be just me. Yeah. And because if you get in this trap of creating this persona of a spiritual leader and teacher, then you have to watch everything you do to make sure it conforms with this persona you've created. Well, that's true of everyone's persona, no matter what they're doing.
Right.
They're trying to create this persona so people will like them. And if you can give up on that, you'll attract people who actually like you, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah. It was totally fascinating when I started to really look at that, when I started the boot camp, because I remember talking to you about all like the things I'd agreed to and the restrictions that I had placed in my life. And, you know, you said, well, okay, it's not really, it's not bad. It's just, you know, it's limiting. It gives you a focus, I guess. But I've met so many people now who seemingly are also living by these rules who don't fully live, you know, they're also questioning how much they need to conform. It's, you know, it's like, it's nice. The truth comes out. Let's like big sigh, you know, big sigh of relief. Like we can still be spiritually connected and, you know, and live our lives authentically and be ourselves.
Yeah. So people tend to be publicly spiritual and privately non-spiritual because they're ashamed of the non-spiritual side, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, but all of that is control. So if you're trying to do anything to be something, you're trying to control your persona, your life, everything. And the whole idea is to give up all that control, just to go by inspiration, whatever that leads to. Yeah. All right. So what's the most interesting thing you've learned over these 17 conversations?
How great my life is. I know so many wonderful people and I get to have so many great conversations. I think that's the takeaway I got. I'm like, wow, I'm really blessed that I have all these wonderful people in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, it's when you start living this authentic kind of life where you're just going on inspiration, it starts this feedback loop of giving you more things to appreciate and more things to realize how awesome everything really is, because you're not focusing on the things that you thought were wrong. And so Are you at this place right now that you're like the happiest or the most contented and satisfied? And so so you've had this journey from depression to contentment.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you trade any part of that journey?
Sometimes I will dip down into a lower state and think that I would, but no, definitely not. No.
Yeah.
Everything I've lived has made this so much better. Yeah.
Did you ever think when you were in that depression that you wished you were different than you were?
Yeah, all the time, I think. That's
like different parents and different everything, right? And now you get to a place where you actually can't even imagine anything being different. You don't want anything to be different, right?
No.
Now then, going forward, what do you want? That's the tricky part, because you get to this place of living in pure desire for all these things you think are missing. You get to a level of acceptance and realization of how great life is, but you're also thinking about where you want to go next. But you, at the same time, you have to go like, why do I want that? Why do I think I want this?
Right.
You know, is it truly for fun or is it truly interesting or is it truly ego gratification in that, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a great question. I don't think I want really anything specific anymore. There are ideas that I'll get. And then my question is like, well, that's fun. I wonder how that will play out. I wonder how that will show up.
Which means you're not attaching. You're not being attached to the outcome. You're like, that's an exciting idea. And I would, you know, I'm interested in exploring that idea and I'll take a couple steps in that direction, but I don't need it to turn out the way I think it does, because I have this newfound faith that I'm always getting everything I need.
Right.
And in that, you become so highly effective because you can stay present and grounded and realize, you know, and start living in this idea of appreciation and love where everything is good as it is. You don't need anything to be different. You know that you will be launched on the course to something different, but whatever that is, you can accept that that's going to be the best possible thing without getting in the way of it or resisting it. Yeah. So I have always...
Because you start to... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say to you...
Yeah, go ahead.
From the moment I saw you, you lit up for me, and I always knew that you are going to skyrocket here. So
thank you. Well, it was the same for me. I met you in that boot camp and I started listening to your podcast and like basically stalking you.
I had no idea. I thought I was stalking you.
Who is this person? And
I was watching your videos and sharing them with everyone and like and I was stalking you digitally. Yeah.
Digitally, not I didn't know where you lived at that point, but now you know,
right?
No, it's a really cool thing to not be attached to the outcomes, and then you know you realize, and this is something that Joshua talks about a lot, is that the inspiration that you get, it's like that path of least resistance that Abraham talks about. It's just the easiest way to get you to where you're meant to go. It might have nothing to do with why you think you had
exactly
inspiration, you know?
Yep. Right. The inspiration could lead you to a completely different thing and you would never have gotten there had you not done the first things. Right. Yeah. Mm. Cool. Good. All right. So
awesome.
So you tell everyone how to find you.
Yeah. So if you are not listening to this on my podcast, you can find this podcast on Inspired Podcast on all the podcast locations. And you can find me at sirgunkaur.com. You can find me through my Facebook group, which is called Sensitive Superhero Tribe. And I will be even more involved in this next boot camp starting January 6th for the Joshua's Unlimited Abundance boot camp that we've been referencing this entire time. So,
yeah. And so we did the boot camp 6 times this first year, and about 100 people went through it. It's like, you know, you and a whole bunch of people you brought, and then people who've been following Joshua, yeah. People who never heard of Joshua came into it, and people who never heard of Law of Attraction came into it. And it's just showing you how reality really works and who you truly are and how to consciously change your vibration to allow in all the great stuff that you intended prior to your birth, with not being attached to what you think you want. Living in this state of acceptance, it takes a little bit of work to figure that out. We do it for 8 weeks, but really once you're in the boot camp, you're in. And so I just am doing my 6th boot camp right now. I just did the coaching call today, and I saw stuff there that was like at this higher level, which I got really for the first time. And it's just, it shows you how this, and we've been talking about it today. It's, you have to get to a place of acceptance of yourself, of everyone else, of the conditions. Then you maintain this alignment, this perspective that everything's good. Then you're receptive to inspiration. Then you're going to feel some fear, but you have to analyze that fear. Then you push past that fear and take the one step you can take on that inspired action, and then just move on this journey of self-discovery without worrying about anything that's wrong. You have to give up this idea of wrong. And if you can do that, you start to transform into a life that feels really good, and you become highly effective in everything you do because you're constantly receiving downloads and receiving inspiration. That's it. If you want to learn more about Joshua, go to Sir Gunn. Sir Gunn will tell you all about Joshua, or Google me, Gary Temple Bodley, anywhere. And we have a couple podcasts. We have all kinds of books. Very cool stuff going on. So I think we've frozen again. Are we back?
Yeah. Okay. No, it was just a little robotic. Hopefully on your end, because you're the one recording. It was recording.
Yeah, it was. It seemed okay here, but we'll find out later.
Yeah.
All right. Well, see, isn't it cool?
We can do a podcast. It was so nice.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be perfect. This is a swap cast.
Yeah.
And you know, in Seattle, where you are now, they don't have very good internet. You got to get better internet. North Carolina, they have amazing internet.
It's crazy because I'm in like the techiest place on earth, right?
Yeah. That's because everyone's using the internet there and no one's using it here.
That's probably what's going on.
All right, so again, it's great talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
Look forward to seeing your success. And 2020 is the year of clarity, so we're going to go to new heights.
Yeah, right? Listen here.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Make sure you follow these podcasts and leave your comments and rate them and do all that great stuff.